All right, I call this meeting of Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect, please, that it is 3:33 p.m. on Monday, May 17th, 2021, and also that we have a quorum present today. Our Senator Stevens, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Rivak. Two of our finance members are conducting other business, Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Bishop. Staffing the committee today is Committee Aide Emma Torkelson, LIO Moderator Nate Williams, and Christopher Dick Grell from Records. Thanks to you all as always. Today's agenda consists of three items we're hoping to move today if possible. The first two are joint resolutions sponsored by the World Trade Committee, SJR 16, End Russia Embargo on U.S. Seafood, and SJR 17, Increase Seafood Exports. The last item will be HB 22, Shared Animal and Raw Milk Products. So let's get started with SJR 16. I'd like to invite Senator Stevens, who chairs the World Trade Committee, to please, sir, place yourself on the record and provide us with some opening comments before we hear from your staff, Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your hearing the World Trade Committee joint resolution on Russian embargo. As you know, Mr. Chairman, Alaska's fisheries are a centerpiece of our state's, of Alaska's economy. Anything that increases the value of Alaska seafood increases the economic health of our state. In 2014, August of 2014, the Russian government banned a broad range of imported products, food products, from the European Union, from the United States, from Canada, from Australia, and from Norway. This was all in retaliation for Western sanctions over the Ukraine crisis. This includes virtually all edible seafood products from Alaska. In order to remain competitive in the world seafood market, our Alaska seafood processors need some help from our federal partners, and SJR 16, Mr. Chairman, is an effort to reach out to those partners and to restore Alaska's seafood industry for fair market access to Russia.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. And were we going to hear from Mr. Lampkin as well?
No, he doesn't. We don't need to. I mean, he wrote this for me, so he knows the whole thing that I said. But maybe there are some folks online that we could hear from.
Well, fantastic. And to those ends, I'd like to ask folks online. It looks like you're doing a good job, but please keep your mics muted and your video off until it's your turn to speak. We will move on to Stephanie Madsen, who is the executive director at Seafood Processors Association. Stephanie, if you're online, please turn on your video, unmute yourself, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you can all hear me. I am here. I'm Stephanie Madsen, executive director of the SC Processors Association. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the invitation to speak. I know that, you know, you're short on time, you're end of the session, so if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to address both of the Senate joint resolutions that are in front of you. I know that many of you, I think all of you, were at the informational session when we presented a lot more detail. So given that, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and a big thank you from the entire seafood industry for your leadership on these critical issues. You know, international trade rules aren't usually the first thing you'll hear discussed by seafood industry workers at the dock or during downtime on our vessels, but the truth is that it's one of the most important variables of Alaska seafood harvesters and processors, their families, and their communities. The vast majority of seafood we produce in Alaska is destined for key export markets, such as Japan, China, the European Union, and the United Kingdom. If we lose competitiveness in those markets, Alaska seafood economy loses value. That translates into reduced revenues, fewer jobs, and lower wages and crew shares. It's as simple as that. In recent years, we've been on the losing end of some international trade policy developments, time after time after time, and every loss has had a direct impact on the health of our industry. Take Russia. Even as Russia's seafood exports to the United States have boomed, its lucrative market has remained almost entirely closed to U.S. exporters. It's just remarkable that Russia simply closed its market to all U.S. seafood 7 years ago and never looked back, imposing ongoing costs on the Alaska seafood economy. Thank you for making Russia's outrageous embargo on American seafood the focus of your first resolution. We hope your leadership on this issue will invigorate a renewed effort to end the embargo and restore fair access to Russia for our products. Things are almost as dire in China. Although our products don't face an embargo there, since July of 2018, they have faced debilitating tariffs. These tariffs make it impossible for us to compete. The Alaska pollock industry was set to ride an unprecedented growth wave in China. Instead, under the weight of these new tariffs, our market shares have collapsed. The value of Alaska pollock exports to China is down 55% since 2017. That's been devastating for our industry, and given that promises made by China in the Phase One agreement have been flagrantly violated, there's no end in sight. And Mr. Chairman, there was just an article in the trade press today confirming that China has not met their seafood purchase commitments. All we ask for, Mr. Chairman, as your second resolution makes clear, is a level playing field. We all know that there's nothing like the quality of Alaska seafood anywhere else in the world. Consumers in the United States and globally should have a choice to buy our premium products. And if they have that choice on fair terms, our industry will thrive. As of today, however, that simple reality remains a distant dream for Alaska seafood processors. Our fervent hope is that the resolutions you are advancing today can catalyze a renewed push for fairness in seafood trade. If we are successful, Alaska seafood industry workers and the broader Alaska economy will benefit. Thank you again for your leadership and support. We sure appreciate the opportunity to testify. And Mr. Chairman, I think you also have Matt Tinning from my office online. Matt is my trade expert and is here for your benefit. If you have any questions, he's available to answer as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Stevens has a question.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. Not a question, just a statement that I think it's important to realize that the industry is not asking for any advantage. It's not asking for any unfair advantage. You're just asking for a level playing field, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Stephanie.
Any other questions or comments? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie, for being online today. I did have a question on because I don't know the status, but I mean, is the U.S. Trade Representative or the President currently seeking to change these things, or where are we with this? I mean, we're requesting essentially that they work on it, but are they still working on it now?
Mr. Chairman, if I could jump in on that, I would say that it is early days in the Biden administration's trade agenda. And we've been encouraged by some of the things we've heard from the new USTR Ambassador, Catherine Tai, including her commitment to enforce the Phase One deal and to review trade relations with China. So we are cautiously optimistic, but I think these resolutions are coming at a critical time to kind of encourage the administration to move in the right direction for Alaska industry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Matt. Would you mind putting yourself on the record, too, there?
Yes. Do I just need to affirm to you that I'm putting myself on the record?
Please, for the record, your name and association.
Yeah, Matt Tinning, Director of Sustainability and Public Affairs for the ATSI Processors Association.
Well, thanks, Matt. And while we have you, unless we have other questions, we'll have you dive right into your testimony as well.
Anyway. Oh, Mr. Chairman, I was just here to support Stephanie. So that concludes APA's testimony.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? All right, seeing none, we're going to open public testimony. Public testimony on SJR 16 is now open. We have one online. Mr. Barrows, could you please put yourself on the record and give us 2 minutes or less?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, and to members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Chris Barrows, and I'm the president of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, and I do so in support of both SJR 16 and 17. We appreciate that the Committee on World Trade has introduced these two resolutions and Senator Stevens, and that this has come before the committee to call attention to the unfair trade practices and inequities in these two key foreign markets that inhibits wild Alaska seafood. And as was just reinforced, it keeps us from competing on a level playing field. So also, just for the record, PSPA was founded in 1914. We're comprised of 8 major seafood processing companies operating at the center of Alaska's wild and sustainable seafood supply chain in Alaska communities. Our members operate 25 facilities in 15 coastal communities, and they purchase Alaska seafood from harvesters, process it into various product forms, distribute it to markets in the U.S. and around the world. Our members compete in global seafood markets against seafood producers in other nations. So it's very important for us that you've highlighted that seafood is an important economic engine for the state. And in fact, it's its number one export product, accounting for half of Alaska exports. Unfortunately, our efforts to maintain and expand value for the Alaska seafood has continued to be threatened by these longstanding unfair trade conditions. And this is a critical priority. Unfortunately, federal trade policies and negotiations have consistently failed to safeguard U.S. seafood producer interests, and this has led to a sharply unbalanced seafood trade landscape we're forced to navigate, with steep tariff barriers imposed by leading trade partners, even while seafood imports are overwhelmingly entered the United States duty-free. So, Mr. Chairman, it's interesting that both the United States and the state of Alaska has made it a priority to emphasize and highlight the biological success and importance of Alaska fisheries. But we need this economic success to happen as well. A robust U.S. seafood export economy directly shapes the long-term health of our processing sector, including our ability to maintain and replace aging infrastructure in the need of ongoing capital investment. And it supports our fishermen communities, and related economies that support seafood production. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. We appreciate your support for the Alaska seafood and your underlying faith that the sustainable and nutritious seafood that comes from our waters off Alaska deserves the attention of the federal level to correct these longstanding injustices currently embedded in U.S. trade frameworks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for your testimony, your willingness to be here today. I don't see any other testifiers online. Are there any? Okay, seeing none online and none in the room, we're going to close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed for SJR 16. Do we have any other comments or questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Joint Resolution 16, version 32-LS0912/alpha, at a committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Is there an objection? All right. Seeing none, SJR 16 version 32-LS0912/alpha moves from committee. We'll take a brief recess to sign the paperwork. All right, we're back on the record. Next is SJR 17, and I would like to invite Senator Stevens, chair of the World Trade Committee, to please sort of put yourself on the record and tell us about SJR 17.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gary Stevens, Kodiak, I appreciate your hearing SJR 17 as well as the one we just dealt with, 16. This has to do with Chinese tariffs, and according to ASME, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, they report that Alaskan waters traditionally contribute approximately two-thirds of the U.S. seafood harvested nationally in our country. In recent years, newly imposed Chinese tariffs on our imports have substantially damaged the market demand for Alaskan seafood in China. It has given a disproportionate advantage to competitors in that market. And as an example, Alaska pollock faces a 500% higher tariff rate than Russian Alaska pollock. So as market share continues to decline and hundreds of millions of dollars are lost to competitors based on these arbitrary tariffs, this resolution, Mr. Chairman, is an attempt to restore the focus on negotiations with China and to ease that tariff war and right the international market in favor of Alaskan seafood products. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Senator Stevens. Are there questions? Oh, yes, Senator Machicki.
Actually, I have a comment. If these seem like they're moving quickly, these are the result of a World Trade meeting that we had where we spent a couple hours in detail about these issues. So just wanted to clarify that for the record.
Right, and thank you, Senator Machicki. I'll just add that it was a joint World Trade and Resources Committee, so we're all there. So so that the public understands. Well, great. Seeing no questions or comments, we're going to open public testimony. And I don't see any public testimony online for SJR 17. All right. Seeing none and seeing no one in the room, we're going to close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. Do we have any final comments or questions for members of the committee before we – yes, Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for dealing with both of these resolutions. And of course, the reason we didn't have any public testimony on the second one is because everyone spoke to both of them in the earlier testimony. So thank you for dealing with these two resolutions.
Well, thank you, Senator Stevens. I think these are very important issues. And with that, Mr. Vice Chair, I'd entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Joint Resolution 17, version 32-LS0913/alpha at a committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Is there an objection? All right. Seeing none, Senate Joint Resolution 17, version 32-LS0913/alpha moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we bring up Representative Tarr for our next bill. Brief at ease. All right, we are back on the record for HB 22 Shared Animal and Raw Milk Products. I would like to invite Representative Garantar. Welcome. And if you would, and your staff, Mr. Thatcher, please, I'm sorry, Thatch Brower, please place yourself on the record and begin walking us through the bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Representative Garantar, District 19, Anchorage.
And Thatcher Brower, Staff Director of Garantar.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. We are very appreciative of the opportunity to present this bill as we are getting close to the end. And in the interest of time, I'm not going to be giving my formal presentation, although I believe it's in your packets. But what I'd like to share is this bill is 5 years in the making, and this is the result of working closely with farmers across the state to try and create additional opportunities in our agriculture industry. Today, we have a herd share program that's in regulation. This bill strengthens that herd share program by putting it in statute. And farmers often make significant investments, and you'll hear from a farmer on this topic. And the suggestion to put this in statute, people feel it gives it more longevity and certainty that the program will continue to exist. And then the additional piece here is adding in value-added products. There's been a lot of requests for items like cheeses, yogurts, ice creams. Those are products that could be made through these herd share programs, but right now are limited to just fluid milk. When we look across the country, Alaska is on the very conservative side of raw milk sales. The only thing more conservative would be to not allow any at all. And so we have the herd share program, but if you look at most of the western states, they go so far as to have retail sales of raw milk. So this is just the modest step forward. We have decades of safe operations in our state that gives us confidence that this will be done safely, and you'll hear about that. And also in your packet, you should have one of the sample contractual relationship that an individual who participates in a herd share program signs as a member, and so very much has the opportunity to inspect the facilities, get to know the farmers, get to know the animals at any time, is welcome to come and inspect as a herd share member, so that option is always there. We've worked with DEC to address concerns related to safety and strike a balance that provides them an opportunity to respond to any foodborne illness outbreak. And so the committee substitute that is under consideration adds that section to it. So this is language we worked with Department of Environmental Conservation, and they got back to us with this draft language that's been incorporated. The second item you'll notice in this version of the bill at the request of DEC is that the farmers maintain two forms of contact for each herd share member, and that way they're able to get in touch if there is any incident or any reason they need to get in touch with their herd share members. This is a great step for us to improve food security and really consistent with Alaskans' desire to have more locally grown, Alaska-grown food. It's also great for our rural areas, for economic development. And Alaska, I was very excited to see the governor's new proposal about developing some farmlands now that we have that bridge finished. I actually drove to that to see that, just to see that it was actually true. And we have tremendous opportunity to improve food security and add economic opportunity, and this bill can accomplish both. So I would like to leave my comments there in the interest of time, because we have these great testifiers for you to hear from, but of course, welcome any questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Do we have questions? Okay, I don't see any questions. We do have a couple invited testifiers that I think we'll move on to. Susie Crosby of Cottonwood Creek Farms. Susie, if you are online, please put yourself on the record. Turn on your video camera and turn off your mute and give us your testimony.
Hi, my name is Susie Crosby. Oh, I've got an echo here. How do I fix this? Okay, my camera's going to go in and out. I've got an old computer. If it goes out again, I'm just going to leave it off. Okay. So for the record, my name is Susie Crosby with Cottonwood Creek Farm. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to present. This is going to be just a little overview of managing a goat herd share operation in Alaska. Next slide. So for starters, people want to know, why do you like goats? Well, they're kind of the missing link between pets and livestock. They have personalities, but they still produce. They're easy to handle, don't need a lot of infrastructure, easy to clean up. And for a lot of people, the digestibility of raw goat milk enables people to drink milk who otherwise would be allergic to store-bought cow milk. And then why herd share? It's nice for goats to be able to help pay their way, pay for their food bill. More importantly, it connects consumers with producers. You've heard the term locavore, people who prefer to eat locally. That's a growing trend. And freedom of choice in our food choices is really becoming a big, a very important issue for many people. And food security in Alaska, we've had some serious wake-up calls in the past couple years. Next slide. Do you remember food insecurity? This is what our grocery store shelves looked like in March of 2020. I went running out to Three Bears one morning during the pandemic in the middle of milking, and this is what I saw. And then I got back to our kitchen, or our downstairs milking room kitchen, and this is what it looked like. So none of our herd share consumers and program members never experienced food insecurity in regards to their weekly milk. So what herd share is, it's the only legal means to access raw milk in Alaska. Currently, it's restricted to fluid milk only, which HB 22 seeks to expand on. It's very sustainable. You've heard the term CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. It's an accountability and trust relationship that's entered into by mutual consent between the producer and the program member, the herd share member. And there is a commitment to picking up your milk on a schedule. And most importantly, it's all about knowing your farmer. You know, there's no formal inspections as part of herd share, but we are inspected not necessarily by someone with a clipboard and checklist in their hands, but every time someone comes over to pick up their milk or to ask us questions about signing up for herd share, you can bet that we're being inspected. Next slide. What herd share is not, it's not the grocery store. We don't have people coming in one day and buying 5 gallons of milk and then not see them for 3 weeks. It's a regular pickup, weekly basis, and again, that commitment. It's not technically selling milk. People who pay their monthly herd share fees are paying the cost and sharing the cost of maintenance and feeding of the goat herd. It's not making cheese or other products yet, but HB 22 would allow value-added products within the definition of the herd share relationship. You would still maintain that accountability, that two forms of contact, and that ease of communication. Next slide. So taking a little detour here, I'll make this really quick, just a little bit about milking goats. And I'm gonna summarize this by saying you should keep things clean and keep your milk cold. If you do those two things, you will in essence have a good high quality product. Next slide. So emphasis on washing hands again, drawing the sharp dividing line. That's kind of one of my mottos with everyone that we mentor. Draw a sharp dividing line between poop and food. The milk stand's over there, the counter's over here. Don't confuse them. Don't set something on the milk stand and then move it to the counter. You can see here the machine accepts the milk into the silver canister, then it's filtered again into glass jars that are immediately put into ice water bath in the fridge, and then ultimately up onto the shelf and then out the door. So it's very important to keep your product as clean and cold as possible. We do educate our share owners in that regard, that they should keep as good a care of the milk as we do and the jars. Next slide. So HB 22 would allow some value-added products, such as here's a picture of some homemade queso fresco. Next slide. Feta with sun-dried tomatoes, and I think there's Kalamata olives. Next slide. Or Chev to be a legal component of a herd share agreement. Next slide. So the benefits of HB 22 to consumers, most importantly, it allows people the freedom to make informed consumer choice and informed consumer choices without the restrictions. Allows access to other dairy options besides milk. There are a number of people who love to eat cheese but are not milk drinkers, so it gives something for those folks. Again, it's access to digestible products for the many people who are incapable of digesting commercial dairy. Consumers often prefer ready-made versus the do-it-yourself. A lot of people would love to have homemade cheese, but they don't have the time or energy to make it for themselves and would love to have it available. And the growing appeal of unique, locally made artisan foods. Next slide. Producers would benefit from HB 22 by having more options for the best seasonal use of surplus milk. We always have extra milk in the summer, run a little short in the winter, and it's a fabulous way to put away a lot of that summer milk. And the cheese freezes really well, and then you have it all winter long. The farmer can buy more hay per gallon of milk because of the value-added product, and because goats do eat even when they're on their dry period prior to kidding. And specialty products would still be available in the winter, even when fluid milk production drops. It's really nice to open, when I open my fridge door in January and there's not much milk there, it's lovely to open the freezer door and see all this cheese stacked up and ready for usage. Next slide. And the overall benefits of HB 22, it would help strengthen Alaska's fragile food system. And again, that wake-up call of the bare shelves during the pandemic, we've realized how fragile that food system really is. Our personal program is maybe just providing her some food security to maybe 80 families, but still those are 80 families who didn't have to go into pandemic panic mode about getting their weekly milk during that time period. Helps to prevent food waste. There's occasionally somebody actually has to dump milk because there's so much milk in the summer they don't know what to do with it. It's a wonderful way to put that milk to good use. It would expand Alaskan agriculture by offering a new business opportunity for local farmers, and most importantly, keeping more of Alaska's food dollars in Alaska. From the goats of Cottonwood Creek Farm, please, free the cheese. And I just wanted to add a note here about the amendment proposed by Senator Keel, and that amendment is suggesting adding testing once a year, a shared raw milk product of the milk-producing animal, providing test results to the department. And that brings up a number of questions. Does that mean the department, I assume, is the DEC? Would the DEC add a fiscal note if they have to be in charge of collecting more data and storing the data? And when DEC stores data, it's not confidential. It can be FOIA'd, so there's another concern. And long story short, we should be making it easier, not harder, for herd share to be able to grow. And adding regulation just adds to the burden and cost with not really a perceptible or measurable benefit. We should be reviewing HB 22 in terms of food freedom and informed consumer choice. I know that there are some folks interested in introducing another bill that would allow for raw milk sales. That is very far from what we're doing today. Susie, what we're talking about today is herd share, and a bill with regulations and inspections would be well suited to a bill about raw milk sales, but that's not our topic today.
Okay. Thanks, Susie. If you can hear us, we don't have an amendment on the table yet, but we can talk about that as we proceed. Thank you very, very much for your testimony. I'm sure we'll have questions. But right now we'll move on to Ms. Amy Pettit, Executive Director of Alaska Farm Trust, for her invited testimony. Amy, if you could hear us, could you please put yourself on the record and begin?
Thank you. Amy Pettit with Alaska Farmland Trust. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please proceed.
Okay, perfect. I like to start this presentation with a little bit of committee participation. Humor me if you will. And I was really excited when I found out that this bill was going to be heard by this committee, because when I looked around to see who was on the committee, there's a lot of friendly agriculture faces. Many of you have been honored and respected by the Farm Bureau as food advocates, agriculture advocates. So just real quickly, raise your hand if you ate today.
Too much.
Okay, good, me too. Raise your hand if you ate something that was Alaska grown. Nobody? Okay, a couple of you, good. We'll quiz more on that later. But raise your hand if you'd like to have eaten more Alaska grown today. Okay, good. We're all on the same page then. Next slide, Thatcher. Again, my name's Amy Pettit. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Farmland Trust. We're a 501c3 nonprofit based in Palmer, and I myself am a self-proclaimed local food champion, and as Susie mentioned, a locavore. Quickly about Alaska Farmland Trust, next slide. We have three major efforts, missions that we work on. We're here to protect agricultural lands. We're here to promote this agriculture industry, and we hope to educate consumers and Alaskans in general about the benefit of the agriculture industry. A couple of the projects that we do are there on the slide. Hopefully, next slide, this next series of slides, I hope this is the first time that you've seen them. First and foremost, the number of Alaska-grown farms grew by 30% in the years from 2012 to 2017. That was the last time that the agriculture census was conducted. So in the lower 48, they lost 3% of their farms, but in Alaska, our farm industry grew by 30% in that five-year time period. Next slide. We're actually leading the nation in the number of new farmers. 46% of Alaskan farmers have less than 10 years experience, and again, we're leading the nation in beginning farmers. We rarely lead the nation in anything agriculture related, but to know that our industry is growing in this way is significant. Next slide. Small but mighty. The number of small farms is up 73% in Alaska. These are less than 10 acres of operation. It's exciting, the Nanana Tolchakit operation that Representative Tarr mentioned in the beginning, the governor's efforts in that way, but folks start small in Alaska, and that's exactly how we want them to start. It allows for growth over time, responsible growth over time. And as Susie mentioned, securing this program in from regulation to statute allows for folks to invest in their farm operation and grow in that responsible way. Next slide, one of my favorites, 47% of our farmers in Alaska are women. We're just proud of that one. We're leading the nation in that category as well. The average number of female farmers in the lower 48 is 27. And again, 47% of our farms are led by women. Final slide in this statistics category, the value of food sold directly to consumers increased from $2.2 million in 2012 to $4.5 million in 2017. And I know we've got some experts around this table right now, but I would challenge any of you to tell us now or in the comments of an industry that saw that significant 100%, more than 100% growth in that five-year time period. Agriculture is growing, pun intended, significant growth. Although these numbers are small, there's really proven statistically defensible growth in this industry, and we want to help that, not hinder it. So next slide, HB 22 is this act relating to animal ownership and relating to the sharing and sale of raw milk and raw milk products. Again, as Representative Tarr mentioned, well, this is 5 years in the making. This bill has had statewide industry support year after year after year. Now is the time. It's my understanding that if action isn't taken by this committee today, will be another year of waiting for this change, which I implore you to really consider taking action today and having an impact on our food industry. I'm one of those people that Susie mentioned. I don't drink milk, but cheese is my love language, and having access to this Alaskan cheese is something that I've been begging the industry and you, the legislature, to make happen for years. Next slide. So again, this bill is about access, it's about removing barriers, it's about developing economies, and it's about expanding production. Food is a bipartisan issue, and Alaska agriculture is a renewable resource that each and every one of you should and hopefully will support. Next slide. I'm not sure if any of you have seen these Free the G's lapel pins circling around Juneau, but I would love for Representative Garantar to get one to each of you, again, should you take action today and pass the bill. Next slide. I don't need to harp on this too much, but nothing beats local food for all of the reasons that Representative Tarr and Susie Crosby have already mentioned. Next slide. This is another reason why I do this. This is another reason why this bill is so important, is the next generation of farmers are lining up to be a part of this industry. But if our legislature does not start supporting them, removing barriers, increasing access, what's in it for them? What's in it for the kids to join this industry? This is my daughter, quite a few years ago, a couple of weekends ago, she had the benefit of going out to Susie Crosby's farm and hand milking goats, watching the process, eating the cheese. And this young Alaskan, you know, this is something that she's interested in. But why would I encourage her to get involved if it's not an industry that's supported by our government? Final slide. Audience participation again. Raise your hand if you want to allow greater access to local food today. We can take action on this today. You can make a change today on this bipartisan, statewide supported issue. I thank you so much for your time, and I really, truly hope that we can free the cheese this year.
Thank you, Amy. We do have a question from Vice Chair Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amy, you have to make something perfectly clear to me. I do support this bill. If I support it, I don't have to wear a Frida cheese pin, right?
Well, I appreciate that. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, those lapel pins are actually in hot demand. If Susie's still on the line, she can tell you that folks are trying to buy them off of us, you know, at Farmland Trust. So you could probably auction it off at one of those fundraisers that you attend, and who knows what we could do.
All right. Thank you, Amy. That was a very informative and entertaining presentation. We appreciate that. We do have a committee substitute before us that needs to be adopted, and so I think this is probably an appropriate time for Mr. Brower, if you could please put yourself on the record and explain the change.
Yes, thank you, Chair Reback, and members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, again, Thatcher Brower, staff to Representative Garantar. The committee substitute for HB 21 that you have in your packets incorporates language that was brought to us by the Department of Environmental Conservation. It adds a line on page 2, line 6, and with that addition, if there's a foodborne illness outbreak at a raw milk facility, the department has authority to test and analyze the product and even stop the distribution of the product, and they also are able to issue warnings. The other change that's in the committee substitute is on page 2. There's a new section. Section 2 is added to the bill. And this language allows the department to inspect a facility and obtain specimens of the product from a facility that produces raw milk. And it clarifies that a facility producing raw milk is one of those facilities the Department of Environmental Conservation can inspect if there's a foodborne illness outbreak. In summary, the new language of the CS will allow DEC to respond if there's a foodborne illness outbreak related to a herd share program. And DEC believes, according to the department, that they would be able to investigate and respond with their current resources, that it would not create a fiscal note or cost any money. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brower. If we do have any questions for members of the committee, be advised that questions directed at the Department of Environmental Conservation, if those are necessary, we do have Christina Carpenter from the division, the director of the division online. Are there any questions from committee members?
I have a question.
Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I just have a question on how frequently some of these facilities, and maybe if Susie's still online, how frequently do they test just internally for things like salmonella, E. coli, listeria, things like that? Or is it more that they just wait until something happens? I don't know who the best person to answer that would be, though. Maybe.
Mr. Brower, maybe who would you like to take that question?
I can start by responding that there hasn't been a foodborne illness associated with a raw milk program in quite some time. I think 2013 was the last outbreak, and I think Susie could also respond to that.
Ms. Crosby?
I'd just say that it's not industry standard to test for that. We have tested in the past on a monthly basis for other components, but it is not really a herd share normal thing to do. I will say that there's been, in the 20 years that we've been doing herd share, there have been two outbreaks that I'm aware of, both from the same family, both relating to Campylobacter with cattle, and the pictures that I saw, it was pretty easy to see that the less than sanitary conditions probably had a big bearing on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions related to the changes in the CS before we move to adopt it? All right, seeing none, could I please get a motion?
Yes, I move to adopt committee substitute for HB 22 version 32-LS0212 / indigo.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Are there any objections? All right, seeing none, the committee substitute for HB 22 is adopted and before us. Do we have any other comments or questions before we move on to public testimony? All right. Public testimony is now open. We have a few folks online. In order to make sure that we get through everybody, to those listening online, please limit your testimony to 2 minutes or less. Place yourself on the record with your name and your affiliation, if applicable, and begin. We'll start with Marlene Wenger. Marlene, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin.
Hello, my name is Marlene Wenger. My husband and I live in the Cabo River Valley. We have been raising hay, beef, and pork since 1985, and goats are a hobby to me. We run a grocery, feed, hardware store in Kenny Lake since 2002, and we started the Cabo River Valley Farm Bureau chapter out here over 20 years ago. We support House Bill 22 and the sale of raw milk products. I am proud to say that we sell as many Alaska-grown products as we can in our store. We carry Havemeister milk, Vanderbilt's produce, Alaska flour products, local honey, local produce, when in season, fishy peat, Alaska chips, various condiments, illusion cookies, pork and beef that we raise on our farm. During the COVID pandemic, some of our shelves were bare of products that came from outside, but all the Alaska-grown products were in stock and available to our customers. We believe it is vital that Alaska supports agriculture as much as they can and does everything possible to support our farmers. So we are in support of legalizing all raw dairy products. Thank you for listening to our testimonies.
Thank you, Marlene. Next, we'll move on to Larray Smith from Willow. Larray, please put yourself on the record and begin.
Hi, my name is Larray Smith. I live in Willow. We have the beginnings of a farm, so I'm speaking in support of HB 22 as currently a consumer of raw dairy milk and eventually a dairy milk supplier for the state. And I love the ability to be able to do that, and I would love to be able to create more and to be able to buy more as well, cheeses and ice creams and things that I cannot do. A lot of people I know don't have the time and also the resources to be able to do it. And last year was a huge eye-opener. I grew up here in Alaska, and I was living in Idaho last year when COVID broke out. And I remember going to the stores and not having milk to drink. Now, down in Idaho, raw milk is available to everybody. And so I had a local friend who had a dairy, and we were able to access food sources from him and from other local farmers, and so we did not go hungry. And we didn't have to worry about the food shortages. And I feel like as Alaska, being so far removed from the lower 48, as much as we can support locally grown foods and locally produced, even raw dairy, which has many health benefits, would be a huge resource for the state and would give us a lot more food stability. I also have several members of my family and friends that I know who are dairy intolerant, so they're not able to handle cow's milk. But goat's milk is something they can handle. And they cannot handle it when it's cooked, when it is processed, but they can handle it raw. Their bodies are just able to digest it better, and it gives them better health. And so I would love to be able to support HB 22.
Thank you, Larray. Next, we'll move on to Amy Seitz from Alaska Farm Bureau. Amy, if you could put yourself on the record and give us 2 minutes or less.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amy Seitz, Executive Director of the Alaska Farm Bureau, and I want to thank you for hearing House Bill 22 today, and hopefully we'll see it move out of the committee today. The Alaska Farm Bureau, we're a grassroots organization whose mission is to improve the economic well-being and expansion of agriculture to enrich the quality of life for all Alaskans. Having a robust local food system will enrich life for Alaskans through improving access to food, having less dependence on a long, complicated supply chain, as well as diversifying our economy. As you've heard, Alaskans spend roughly $2 billion on purchased food every year, And most of those dollars leave the state since we only produce about 95% of our food here, or 95% of our food here. 95% is imported. Agriculture in Alaska has so much opportunity for growth, and our farmers have been showing they can expand, as you saw in Amy Pettit's presentation with the Ag Census stats. We need to support and encourage this growth, and a key part of support is through good policies. House Bill 22 is a great bill designed to help farmers succeed and increase access to more local food products through allowing herd share owners the option to value-added products like cheese or butter, kefir, and other products. Along with being a bill to support farmers and increase food security, it's a freedom of choice bill, as has been mentioned before. A person should have the option to choose if they want to get cheeses or other products made from raw milk. And as mentioned before, there are safety nets built into the herd share program. You get to know your farmer, you know the farm, you know the animals, you know the process and their setup and the cleanliness of the system. And there's also a good traceability system built into the herd share program. So in the interest of time, I just want to encourage you to support House Bill 22, support moving it from committee today so we can expand some of our local food production. And thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Amy. We appreciate your willingness to testify today. Next, we'll move on to Melina. Melina, please put yourself on the record and give us 2 minutes or less.
Hi, this is Melina Savigny. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I am testifying in support of House Bill 22. I am a herd share member located in Wasilla, Alaska. I moved to Wasilla with my family 5 years ago and needed to find a source of goat's milk for my son because he's actually allergic to cow's milk. My son was still a baby at the time, and we needed goat's milk so that we could make his formula. I was relieved to become a herd share member and find that service so that I could access local, fresh, raw milk that is dependable. I was able to visit the goat farm at any time that I wanted, not only to observe the extreme care and cleanliness taken while milking, but to get to know the goats personally. My kids visit the farm often, and they've gotten to know the goats by name. When we have our milk in the morning, they even ask, whose goat's milk is this that we're having with our cereal today? I am an employee at a large shipping company at the Port of Alaska in Anchorage, and I get to see firsthand how quickly our food supply can get cut off. The state of the port's infrastructure is dire. A piling fell into the inlet a few summers ago, and many of the pilings are rusting away with metal brackets acting as band-aids to keep the piling solid. We are literally at a tipping point in this state. With the recent earthquake, it's an absolute miracle that the port was not damaged beyond use. Why am I talking about the Port of Alaska at this time? Because the port is a critical infrastructure, and a majority of our food supply for Alaskan comes into this port. Not only is the infrastructure of the port failing, but we're also seeing increased late arrivals of our ships into the port due to stronger winter storms. All it takes is one sailing, just a few hours late, and we already noticed the difference on our grocery store shelves becoming bare or empty from produce and dairy. We've even noticed store shelves being empty during the pandemic, but prior to the pandemic, I personally remember at least 4 times that the milk sheds were nearly bare. We need to do anything that we can to increase food security in Alaska. We owe it to our residents to make it easier for them to make their own choices and offer access to local food supply. Thank you for hearing my testimony. I'm open for any questions.
Thank you, Melina. I don't see any others online to testify, are there?
No.
Okay, we have no more testifiers online. Are there any in the room? I don't see any. We're going to close public testimony. All right. Public testimony on HB 22 is now closed. Do we have any amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 1, which comes from legal as I, like Iliamna, dot 1.
I will object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a basic food safety amendment, this step. And let me start by saying this is a really cool notion. It's a really neat bill, and I really like the whole idea of growing our agriculture sector, growing our food security sector. The Senate President and I were trying to do a little wild-caught Alaskan-grown food this weekend. He had more success than I did. but what we have when we start getting into the commercial arena, when it's not just me catching fish or fermenting my own sauerkraut or all the other things I do in the kitchen for my own family, when we start to get in the commercial arena, it's just a real basic baseline public safety role. And that's what Amendment 1 is about. It would require one test a year, and we'd let DEC say what needs to be tested among the processed products under this bill for foodborne pathogens, and we'd let DEC say which one. I'm pretty sure it won't be, the butter, because that's pretty low risk, but we let the experts determine that, and have the herd share operator submit that test to DEC. We heard some great testimony about growing the agriculture business, and I loved all the public comments in the packet. It's really clear that these are small dairy businesses, right? We've created in the law this legal fiction that they're based on ownership, and it's a business model, but it's not what anybody thinks of as ownership. You can't sell the cow or move the cow. You can't control what the goat is fed or sell its offspring. It's a subscription service, which is fine. In fact, it's a great business model. Subscription services work really well. And the CS that we just adopted is also really good because it does allow for some inspection after there's been a foodborne illness. But my concern is that that approach, valuable as it is, does amount to closing the barn door after the dairy goat gets out. So one of these tests, I checked in with DEC, runs, depending on which test, on the low end about $17, on the high end about $70. Not a colossal annual expense. But the reason the amendment applies to the processed products is that they're higher risk than just the milk. I mean, it's not, high school, we all took high school biology, I'm sure, right? The longer you hold it and the higher the temperature, the more bacterial growth has an opportunity to happen. And to make cheese or yogurt, it's got to be warmer than fast chilling the milk. To keep it into the winter, you hold it longer than if you deliver the milk, or they pick up the milk and drink it before it spoils. So, it's the goal was not to create a fiscal note. DEC doesn't have to do this test itself. The way I've asked Ledge Legal to draw this language, the dairy farmer can do that and submit the results. But it does give us that basic food safety step, because not everybody knows what to look for when they go out and visit the farm. I certainly don't. I do pretty well with my kitchen and with my own processing, but I wouldn't know how to inspect a commercial operation. So a very basic preventive measure, because it's happened. I mean, we had, with a grade A dairy here in Alaska, I think it was about 10 years ago, an inspection, a test, and there was Listeria in the cheese. They had to throw it all away. But because there was an inspection and because there was a test before it got sold, nobody's toddler ate that cheese. Nobody's grandparent who might be immune compromised ate that cheese. So that's Amendment 1, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. I'd like to hear from the bill's sponsor. A couple questions that I have before we take action on this amendment. We're talking about relatively small co-ops of individuals who pool together to buy goats so that they can share these products. Is that correct? And How do you feel about this amendment and this language, and if you could just kind of walk us through your thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really appreciate the opportunity. And these are small operations. We're talking about dozens of animals, you know, in terms of the number of total animals. And I wanted to stress that we did work with the Department of Environmental Conservation, and the two additions to the bill were at their request, the two forms of communication, and then the additional authority for the inspections. This particular idea was never suggested by the department when we sought input from them. So at this time, I don't think this is a necessary provision. We have a long history of these operations operating safely, and I think there's a strong commitment to that. There's always a little bit of risk. If you go to the DEC website today, you can look at the recall page, and there are dozens and dozens of product recalls of food products from all over the country. The great thing about a HerShare program is that, and because of limited time, Susie didn't talk about it as much, but, you know, those pictures that you saw are actually labeled by the animal. So they can say, you know, this particular bottle of milk came from that goat. And so, you know, can very much trace, you know, if there were an issue. And they would never even allow that. You know, they do a lot of the work. And there are sort of visible physical signs of some of the illness, for example, that you might be able to see with the animal. And so the importance of cleaning, Susie talked about. So I really think they're very committed to safety. It's in their best interest. They, you know, as a sort of operation, they're not going to survive otherwise. And so I don't think this is necessary at this time, but I appreciate the intent.
I thank you, Representative Tarr. And I have a little bit of experience with raw milk products. I grew up next to a dairy farm, and I partook of a lot of raw milk and raw milk products. And I think back to, you know, to think it might have been illegal for me to maybe try my neighbor's cheese when we had you know, I find that just a little bit intrusive, and I would hope that in these small groups that if it is $10 to $15 that folks in a co-op would have that done without the government telling them to do it. And so I'm going to maintain my objection. And if we have any other comments,
another question.
Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, this is actually for the maker of the amendment. The $17 per $70 per test, is that widely available to people? So, like, if you lived in a remote area and you were using House Bill 22 as the form, would they also have access to those tests?
Mr. Chairman, thanks for the question. So my understanding is that those tests are, this type of testing is available in a number of places throughout the state, but it's not a do-it-yourself that you could have on your own farm, most of these. You would need to send the samples, you know, and that's not significantly different than most food businesses that get a little inspection and testing.
So, Mr. Chairman, I feel, thank you, Mr. Chairman, I feel confident in the CS, which actually adds the department's ability to trace outbreaks if they do become, I mean, it even says if the department suspects a potential outbreak of a foodborne illness. And then in Section 2, adding the commissioner, she'll also have free access to these facilities. I think that that's clear enough for me. I don't know that we need amendment number one.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Other comments, questions? All right. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm cognizant of the hour. I would like to work with the department and make sure that this language doesn't generate a fiscal note, just because it's, I think, day 119. The issue remains a live one for me, but I'm going to withdraw the amendment at this time.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki, or I'm sorry, Senator Keel. Amendment number one has been withdrawn. Do we have any other amendments? Any other comments, questions?
Just have a brief comment, Mr.
Yes.
Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair.
We've talked about this bill for the last several years, so I'm really looking forward to another goat milk bill coming from Senator Keel. I think it's something we should discuss every year. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Machicki. All right. With no other comments, yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a good bill, and I like the little pins they have, but there's no Kodiak there. I mean, we have a nice little goat herd in Kodiak, and they're very productive, but we're not even on those pins. So I
we're done. Look at that. We're done with amendments. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the bill's sponsor, Representative Tarr. Thanks for being here, and thanks for the bill. With that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for HB version 32-LS0212/I out of committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Are there any objections? All right, seeing none, committee substitute for HB 22 version 32-LS0212/India moves from the committee. Thank you again to everybody who called to testify and answer questions. We appreciate all of you, of course, our committee staff. We're going to wrap up. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, May 19th for bills previously heard or scheduled. We'll let you know as soon as possible if we have an agenda for Wednesday. And with that, it is 4:39 and we are adjourned.